You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
April the 22nd, 2020. You know why presidents always look so old when they leave White House office? Look at the pressures upon the presidency. Obama, when Obama went in, looking bright, spry, head full of black hair, and when he left, a lot of gray, and understandable. Now, I'm not sure how much hair Trump's going to lose before this is over, or how much is turning gray, maybe already coloring, I don't know. But there are a lot of demands upon anyone who wants that chair. If you sign up for it, you take on all those responsibilities. That's why there's a very good question as to if Joe Biden would be capable. But we'll let that rest for another day. But in addition to the coronavirus issue, the president has other things on his plate he has to have. And today he announced that he's instructing the U.S. Navy to shoot down and destroy any Iranian gunboats harassing our American ships. They once again had a tense encounter in the Persian Gulf. Six U.S. Navy warships conducting drills with the U.S. Apache attack helicopters in international waters off Iran, repeatedly harassed by 11 Navy vessels from the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, crossing in front of us, behind us, high-speed, extremely close range. The president says in the future, put them out of the water. In the meantime, the Iran Revolutionary Guard is celebrating that they sent their first military satellite into orbit. Iran is not supposed to be testing any missiles, according to the UN agreement, but they're going to do what they want to do. And the concern we have now, while this is supposedly just a military satellite, and there's no independent confirmation, apparently, at this point, our concern has to be an intercontinental ballistic missile. Because if they can get to a satellite range, they could certainly move to the next level. All right, to the issue pressing across the nation. The Senate did pass that $484 billion relief package, funding small business loans, hospital aid, additional testing for the Chinese coronavirus. Now, you listen to Democrats, and they would have you believe Republicans didn't want to spend any money on the hospitals, didn't want to spend any money for more testing. No, that's not correct. We were just trying at that time get money into the hands of small business. Small business, the engine driving our economy and with all of its workers. But we'll get into that as well later because, again, the Democrats, I was going to say they have no clue, but actually some of them do have the clue. They know what they're doing. They know exactly how they're playing the game. And they're going to continue to play and resist because if it can keep this in turmoil going up to November, they see victory on the horizon, taking Trump out of office because of the virus. That's their intent. That's their plan. And then the CDC director is now warning a second wave of the coronavirus could come back with the start of the normal flu season. And of course, some states are beginning to try to figure out how do we reopen? What steps can we take? How fast can we get going? And Georgia is at the front of the line. And of course, there's backlash already in Georgia and across the nation, reference what Georgia is doing. But I have to ask again, the question is, folks, how much longer do you want to wait? This word that a second wave could come later this year, should we wait through the fall before we open up states and businesses and ease on these restrictions and so forth and just wait for the second wave to come through? Oh, and then what if they say, you know, it could be another wave coming? At some point, even if we don't have a vaccine, we got to take a stand. Where are we right now? Worldwide infections, 2.5 million. Dead, 180,000. In the U.S., infections, 820,000. dead 45,000 above that mark, 45,100, listed as COVID. Many of them, of course, not confirmed because they had not been gone through an autopsy and they had to have the COVID test to do it. Coming up over the next 2 hours, we've got a lot for you. Congresswoman AOC, again, and a perfect example of someone who has no clue and wants everyone to believe the Republicans are to blame for all of this. Dr. Lehman's going to join us, reference a home test kit that's supposedly coming out. And then the Chris Cuomo fake news in full display. We've got it all for you. So you settle back, let your friends and neighbors know we're on the air. Because over the next 2 hours, we're going to cover all of these topics and more, including some strange cancellations because of the virus. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
COVID-19 is a new health concern, but Wellington Environmental has 30 years experience to make your company and environment safe. Wellington Environmental can give you peace of mind, and the cost is very reasonable. These days, you can't take a chance that customers, employees, your family would be exposed to COVID-19. You have to be proactive. That starts by calling Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. You'll quickly see why customers have relied on Wellington Environmental for decades. COVID-19 can survive for hours on your furniture, your computers, your equipment, and every time someone touches that surface, they could be exposed. You don't want that liability. Call Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality, lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Come on in, I'll be close to your mind.
USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Certainly had a lot of praise and a lot of criticism, but we're taking a measured step. I would urge people to really look at the guidance that we're going to be putting out the rest of the week. You know, I announced this on Monday so we can have time to educate the public and the business owners that this is just not handing them the keys back to go back to where we were. This is a measured approach with a lot of different requirements and guidance that we're going to be putting out.
That is Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia. And he is looking to make his state the first one to actually begin to open up more. Missouri is one of the states that was one of the last ones to declare statewide restrictions and declaration. And other states are under the same restrictions in their various areas. And they're all looking as to when we can make the moves and move forward first, not just necessarily to be the first in the nation to do it, but when can we open up for the economy and for the citizens. We've seen numerous protests across the nation, many in the capital of Missouri, Jefferson City the other day, and they've happened elsewhere because the economy is at a stall at this point. Not only that, it's going the other way, and for the families that are out there suffering right now, there's no immediate relief. The stimulus check is going to help, and the stimulus money that just got approved, that's going to be good, but it's not going to be enough because every day a business stays closed. Whatever money they get is not going to make up for the money that's lost, and the same for families. They can have different options on paying a rent or delay on a mortgage or a car payment or something of that nature, but it all comes to a head at some point. We cannot continue to lock down. The other side of that is we cannot rush to open up. There are legitimate arguments to be placed around and caution barriers around opening up the states as we move forward. Governor Kemp just detailed briefly in his that we are going to have certain restrictions. Well, you know he's going to have resistance over that. You just know that. Because, one, I hate to say it, they're looking at the fact he's Republican, and that's going against what Democrats want. They want, I'm telling you, they want to see this chaos, this shutdown, last as long as possible. Many of the Democrats are more than happy to see you suffer while they play. And I'm just thinking about some of these Democrats who have their own businesses. Have you reached a point where you're thinking you're not getting the help you should be getting? But, of course, are you jumping on board and saying, well, we blame Trump and the Republicans? Are you wanting your state to open up and get your business going? Kemp, the Republican, and again, a staunch ally of Donald Trump, says we're going to allow various businesses to open this Friday. Nail salons, massage therapists, bowling alleys and gyms. Church services can resume as normal. And then on Monday, he says restaurants and movie theaters can open. They are still barring, his Georgia state order is still barring cities from imposing their own restrictions on businesses. In other words, they're not going to let the cities turn around where they have a Democrat mayor and fight against what the state's already authorized. This is going to be an aggressive move. Of course, President Trump has been pushing for a May 1st opening anyway across the nation. But in Georgia, what we're seeing is exactly a political game in play. Make no mistake about it. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, his state is trying to move to a reopening, said, I worry that our friends and neighbors in Georgia are going too fast too soon. We respect Georgia's right to determine its own fate, but we're all in this together. What happens in Georgia will impact us in South Carolina. So see, there's a Republican viewpoint as well, the sense that you have to do this carefully, bit by bit. Data collected by Johns Hopkins says as of yesterday, Georgia had 19,800 cases of coronavirus, 802 deaths in the state. But apparently based upon their data lines, their infection rates are down, hospitalizations are down. But here comes Stacey Abrams, one of those on the Democrat side that wants to point out what we're doing here is taking a risk. In fact, she might also compare it to some extent of playing Russian roulette. And, of course, Stacey Abrams, she has a reason to get involved in this. She was a former Georgia candidate, if you recall, for governor. Did not get it, had all kinds of support, didn't get it. And some are already talking about her being on the ticket with Biden. So she's got to get into the play, and she's got the party line down.
The worry is that by trying to push a false opening of the economy, we risk putting more lives in danger. And there is nothing about this that makes sense. The mayors of Atlanta, Albany, and Savannah have all questioned the wisdom of doing this. And the fact is the governor didn't consult with mayors before making this decision.
And, of course, he doesn't need to, but I don't know if he did or didn't consult, but I will point this out to you. The mayors that she now announced, the named Atlanta, Albany, Savannah, would it surprise you to hear that they are all Democrats? And Stacey Abrams, of course, a Democrat. This should not be a political battle, Democrat and Republican. That's why I also gave you Lindsey Graham's view from South Carolina, a Republican. We all have to be concerned, regardless of your political stripes, on where we go. But again, the question is, how much longer can we keep things shut down? I'm looking at a piece that basically is stating this division on battling and opening the states is becoming a north-south battle. Talking about how this is a north-south divide. And, of course, what they're really saying, I guess, is, I don't know if they're trying to allude to race or what they're doing with that piece. But I do think Dennis Prager raised an interesting issue. Of course, Dennis Prager on Salem Network, also a columnist for the Daily Signal, raises a simple question. if half the country's COVID-19 deaths were in Montana, if half of all the deaths we've had in the nation, and I told you we have now crossed the 40,000 mark, if half of them were in Montana, would New York shut down? Of course not. What would you see happen? Maybe be careful of anyone leaving Montana. They have to be checked and so forth. Anyone going into Montana, you have to be aware you're taking a risk. You're not going to shut down everything because of one area. The metro area of New York is the hotbed at this point, and we've seen other hot areas pop up. But you have to do it on a spot basis as we move forward in opening the nation and looking for the trouble spots. What we have now is a blanket over the entire nation. And the other issue about folks waiting for this money to come through is the fact that when it comes through, is it going to be enough? They just passed again this $484 billion relief package. That's on top of the $350 billion passed earlier. And we still have businesses that are waiting to see if they're going to get the money in time. In the meantime, they've had to shut down. And especially the small businesses. The other issue has been from the very beginning. How many of these restrictions are too restrictive? How many of these decisions are perhaps going too far when it comes to violating the Bill of Rights? Attorney General Bill Barr has signed on to this issue in the sense that he says the DOJ might be siding with citizens who sue states over any onerous restrictions. What he said in an interview was, our federal constitutional rights don't go away in an emergency. They constrain what the government can do. And in a circumstance like this, they put on the government the burden to make sure that whatever burdens it's putting on our constitutional liberties are strictly necessary to deal with the problem. They have to be targeted. They have to use less intrusive means if they're equally effective in dealing with the problem. And that's the situation we're in today. He goes on to say we're moving into a period where we have to do a better job of targeting the measures we're deploying to deal with this virus. I think all of us, from what I've seen on social media and from comments into the program on Facebook and email, folks are upset. They want to get back to work. They want to get out of their homes. They want to move around. And I've seen those on the other side say, well, who's going to be willing to stand up? Pardon me. Who's willing to stand up and take responsibility when we have additional deaths? Barr said again, the idea that you have to stay in your house is disturbingly close to house arrest. I'm not saying it wasn't justified. I'm not saying in some places it might still be justified. But it's a very onerous issue, as is shutting down your livelihood. Very burdensome on liberty. That's why you're seeing more protests. That's why you see some in the streets at the various capitals across the nation. That's why you see the push to move forward. It comes back to you. Are you reaching the point where, you know, I see enough people moving around? Not everyone's going around masked, or maybe I'll continue to wear a mask, and maybe they will, that's fine, but at some point, can we start to resume normal life? Georgia residents are going to be a test. There's no doubt about it. And the nation's going to be watching. Because as they begin to open up the nail salons, as I mentioned a moment ago, and barbershops and things of that nature, those businesses, and then next week starting opening restaurants, everyone will be watching for what increase of infections they're going to see in Georgia. Now, if there are no infections right away, is that an open door for other states to follow? No, it's not. Again, it has to be on a database. But again, I hate to tell you, the Democrat philosophy and attitude is the longer they suffer, the longer they suffer, the more impact we can have on getting Donald Trump out of office. They don't care about the means to the end. They don't care that your life is disrupted for as long as they can make it happen. The coronavirus has given them the ammunition they failed to have when they came up with their Russian collusion story and they came up with quid pro quo. None of that mattered. None of it had an effect. And what they're doing now is you see them constantly shout out, every death is on the doorstep of the White House and Trump is to blame. And with a Republican governor in Georgia opening up his state, if there's additional death and infection, and no doubt there will probably be, he's going to be blamed directly. China has put us into this spot. And in fact, one White House spokesman and figure in the White House says China basically delivered 4 kill shots against our nation. 4 kill shots. I'll explain when we continue.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
You want to look better, stronger, leaner? Visit my trainer, Jamie, and his team at Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. Check it out, redfitnesslounge.com, redfitnesslounge.com.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, 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 bass.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
As we told you yesterday, Missouri becomes the first in line of states to sue China directly for the impact of the coronavirus upon the state. And, of course, the Fed government moving forward in different ways as well to make China pay in some way. Well, the trade director for the White House, Peter Navarro, has something that I think should certainly be acknowledged. And I think he's right. He's blaming Beijing for 4 kills against America. He said they spawned the virus probably in that lab in China. Then they hid behind the shield of the World Health Organization. And then what they did over a 6-week period is allow hundreds of thousands of those in that area to get on aircraft and seed the world. And while doing that, what they did was they vacuumed up all the world's masks, gloves, goggles, personal protective equipment, 2 billion masks, and then turned around offering these items that might have been 50 cents for $3, $4, or $5, and then sending out counterfeit tests on top of that. 4 kills. He says that's the 4 kills, the killing of Americans and people internationally. And what is puzzling to me is why the mainstream media and national Democrats don't get that. Because they don't want to acknowledge anyone but Trump being responsible. They are playing the game of that, and at the same time, they're giving alliance to China. And they're picking up on it. China's state-run Global Times propaganda newspaper has columns out proclaiming the end of American democracy and declaring that Washington is no match for China in fighting diseases. This came out of China. And they didn't like us even calling it the China flu or China virus because it was slanderous, xenophobic, racist. But that was where it originated. And as Peter Navarro suggested, I think he's right, we've had a situation where they are probably spawning the virus directly. They hid it when they talked to the World Health Organization, denied that it could be passed person to person. And as he said, during that period of time, thousands of those living in the Wuhan area were allowed to leave and go around the world. They were ticking time bombs. And the Chinese government is now officially denying even being the origin of it. They don't want to even acknowledge that it started there, when originally they have issued a few statements acknowledging, well, it might have been from one of those bats in the wet markets. And, of course, they were silencing their scientists and destroying tests and information. And now the mainstream media is following with the propaganda from China that Washington is no match for China, and this could be the end of American democracy. Another reason why we need to open up our country as soon as we can, safely. So this new package that got passed, how much is going to actually get to those who need it? And who's, again, going to be left out without money? We've got an expert coming up to join us on that. Got some good questions. I know he'll have the answers. Please stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
I'm sure you have some alarms to let you know if someone breaks into your home. But what happens if your home is invaded by creatures? Six legs, eight legs, maybe more. Rottler Pest Solutions can help keep those pests out of your house. And if they're already inside, get them out. In fact, you can get a free, no-obligation inspection and estimate to protect your home. You can get that at any time. Go online to Rottler.com. Rottler.com. Schedule your free inspection today. Rottler is the largest family-owned pest control business in Missouri. 10 locations, more than 200 team members. Plus, Rottler has a money-back guarantee. If you're not happy for any reason, they will make it right or your money back. You know, I first called Rottler more than 40 years ago, so I know they will take good care of you. I continue to trust Rottler. Rottler Pest Solutions, Rottler.com, Rottler.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
We're back, and we have with us a guest, Adam Michelle, out of the Heritage Foundation, an expert on tax policy and the federal budget. Glad to have you on board, Adam.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Let me break down some things. First of all, your first reaction to the bill that got passed out of the Senate, and now we wait for the House to move on it, this $484 billion bill?
Yeah, just shy of $500 billion, just shy of $500 billion of additional spending. A large portion of that is goes to shore up the Paycheck Protection Program, which is supposed to help small businesses sort of bridge this gap while they're being required to stay shut down. I think the good news is that this bill did include an unrestricted bailout for state budgets, which is what the Democrats on the Hill were pushing for. The danger there is that you start bailing out state governments, and all of a sudden the federal taxpayer is on the hook for $7 trillion worth of unfunded retirement and pension liabilities, and we lose our system of federalism where states are supposed to manage their own finances.
But they want it in those Democrat states, New York and California. They want that money to help shore up those very points.
Correct. They've been pushing very, very hard for a federal bailout like that. And they're very explicitly not just asking for money that will cover revenue shortfalls or cover the cost of coronavirus, directly related coronavirus expenses. They're asking for even more than that, because they know that they've made promises to their workers, to people in the state, that they simply cannot pay back without significantly raising taxes, which hurts their economy and And frankly, they don't want to make those hard choices. So they're trying to pass the buck to federal taxpayers, which is frankly incredibly unfair to all the states that have budgeted responsibly. And it goes beyond just the pensions. Many states have rainy day funds where they can cover, in some cases, in the case of Wyoming, an entire year's worth of spending simply with their rainy day fund. But states like Illinois have next to nothing in their rainy day fund. And, so some states don't need the bailout, and federal taxpayers shouldn't be on the hook for those irresponsible.
All right, let's talk about when it comes to the payroll protection plan on those who got bailouts and who needed don't. And I agree with you on the states. When you start looking at some of the businesses, the small businesses were hoping to get into that first cut of money, and they didn't in many cases. They felt they got cut out, or they went into the queue, and now they had to refile, so hopefully they're going to get some of the other. But in the process, we also saw things like Ruth's Chris and Shake Shack and others like that jumping in and getting money, and they're basing it on each restaurant would have less than 500 employees, and apparently that gave them a road into that. How did that loophole exist, and why are we not shutting it down and demanding the money back? Now, I think one of them has already decided to return the money.
Yeah, so what you're talking about is like franchise restaurants and parts of businesses that are not directly under the control of the corporate headquarters ended up being able to access this money.
But they did it as a corporate group. They did not do it as individual restaurants.
Yes. So and you're right. To the extent that the big guys got in the front of the line is something that they're trying to fix at least partially. I'm not sure if they haven't fixed the problem that you just articulated, but the idea that bigger businesses that already have lines of credits with banks that know how to work the financial system got in the front of the line in this first tranche of money that went out the door. The money that they're filling up right now, a portion of it is reserved for community banks, for folks that are underbanked or unbanked, so businesses that don't have these lines of credit already lined up. And so hopefully some of these folks will be able to access more of the funds that are being made available.
And I acknowledge there are waiters and wait staff and chefs and hostesses at the Ruth's Chris and the cooks and so forth. They're all among the employees that need help. I agree with that. But again, when I'm looking at some of these companies, I don't know why they don't just make a declaration. If you appear on the stock exchange, you got a symbol on the stock exchange, you don't get a dime. You don't get a dime of this.
Well, I mean, I think businesses across the United States, whether or not they're publicly traded or not, need a bridge to sort of make it our way from before the crisis to after the crisis. It's simply because you're big or you're publicly traded doesn't mean that you have large sums of money sitting around to help bridge these differences. That's why the programs that have been passed are not only targeted at small businesses, which they should be, but there's also loans for larger businesses, and there's tax credits that help businesses of all sizes keep people
and I'm for that on
the payroll.
Yeah, and I'm for that because you got the airlines and so forth, and I'm for that. And some of these are forgivable loans, and some are to be paid back. But you're also right that the larger groups like this, they have banking lines of credit. They've got assets. They can put it on the line to do that. But I still come back down to the small businesses out there, a guy that's got a wood repair shop, and he's got four or five people working for him, and they've been pretty busy, and now they're shut down, and they don't know if they're going to reopen.
Exactly, and that's why they're replenishing the funds in this PPP, Paycheck Protection Program, so that there's more money available for all of the different folks that need it. And I think it's a shame that it was held up this long, but I'm glad to see that the Senate moved it forward. There's certainly lots of things I would love to see changed in the sort of broader package, but as far as getting relief to folks quickly, that's certainly what they're trying to do with this package they just passed.
You're listening to Adam Michel. He's an expert on tax policy and federal budget with Heritage Foundation. He's not responsible for the passage or writing the bill, but of course they try to have input. But of course another question has been raised of Ivy League colleges, universities, and and more than just Ivy League, that have all their endowments and their monies and everything else. They're laying off, furloughing staff. They're applying for that money. And I have to ask again, where are the barriers? Where are the restraints on who's going to end up getting this? And I don't mind if they're getting it. Unfortunately, it's always at the expense of someone else.
And that's one of the things that we've been pushing for, recommending to Congress, and I wished had been part of the package that was just passed. I think putting restrictions on people being able to access the loans up front will unfortunately just slow down the process and make it less likely that the little guy gets to the front of the line. But that doesn't mean that we can't put more restrictions on the back end. When these loans start getting forgiven, there should be additional documentation that's necessary that you were actually impacted by the crisis, that you didn't have access to other resources. Those types of checks on the back end, I think, can shore up the program and make it fairer without putting unnecessary hurdles in the way of folks that need the aid right now rather than in a month when the federal bureaucracy gets around to checking your paperwork. And so that's one of the things that can still be passed in future bills and something that we've been recommending to Congress.
But the CARES Act is originally signed into law by the president on March 27th. It's been problematic in several ways with the Heritage Foundation.
Correct. I think one of the biggest problems with the CARES Act, $1.8 trillion package that was passed, was the expansion of unemployment insurance benefits. The CARES Act adds an additional $600 a week to unemployment benefits, which for most Americans, the majority of Americans that are laid off, that means you can now make more money on unemployment than you could if you maintained your job. And this creates all sorts of problems. It makes it harder for businesses to get people to come back to work once we do start opening up. But even businesses that are still open today, the various fast food restaurants and other service industries that are vital, are actually having trouble keeping people on the payroll right now because it is so attractive to take this additional benefit.
Yeah, that's already there. That's water under the bridge to that extent. But I just think, and you'll hear from the left, that I'm convinced they want to see this chaos continue for some time. If we get this stimulus package actually to the people that really have the small businesses that want to get fired back up, we will get the nation back on track.
That's certainly the hope, is if we can both contain the virus and figure out a system to open up in a rational sense before all the small guys start failing and there's nothing the government can do. These bridge payments are trying to get folks to that other side, and it's keeping people afloat so that they don't have to close their doors, so that they can reopen
in the last,
once this is all behind us.
In the last 20 seconds, is this going to suffice, or will there have to be another yet?
I think that they'll more money is needed for the Paycheck Protection Program ultimately, but more reforms are also needed so the money goes a longer way, as we've been talking about, and we should be focused on keeping the little guys afloat rather than all of the other extraneous things that are going to be floating around here
Very
in Washington.
Good. Very good. Adam, again, we appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you.
You bet. Adam Michelle, the Heritage Foundation. We'll take a break when we come back. Many folks have been trying to school their kids at home even before this, and certainly during this time, so the kids keep some education. Wait till you hear a report condemning you because you're not smart enough as a parent. Stand by.
Crazy for thinking that my love could hold you. I'm crazy for trying and crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving you.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Reportedly, fewer than 5% of children are homeschooled in the U.S. 5%. Before all the schools shut down, as we're seeing now. And, of course, a lot of the homes and environments, the parents are trying to keep some kind of education in front of their kids, having them read daily or do something. I know one of my daughters took her son and said, you know what he's going to do? We're going to do some life lessons, things like how to wash clothing, how to get them out of the dryer, how to iron if necessary, maybe even sew on a button. In other words, things you need in everyday life. That's a good idea. And she's certainly qualified to teach other subjects as well, but she decided, you know, let's just use this time to get through some basic life lessons. I will never forget my mother sitting me down and saying, I want to show you something that you're going to need in life. And I had no idea what this was going to be. I thought, is this going to be the talk? And I'm going to get it from Mom? I mean, really? Really? I'm 13 years old and Mom's going to give me the talk? Because I know the stork doesn't bring the babies, but Mom, I don't want to hear this from you. I didn't want to hear it from my dad either. But she sat down and said, all right, are you paying attention? I said, yes, ma'am. And I'm frightened what's going to come next. And she brings out a thimble and a needle and thread and a button. She says, you're going to learn to sew a button on your shirt. Whew, wow. I did not have the talk. Good. I was worried about that. But she taught me how to sew a button onto a shirt. And a few other things along the line as far as homemaking that many guys may never have a chance to learn. Maybe if they've got bigger sisters around, they help teach them. Or they learn on their own, or they never learn and they don't really care. And that's fine, too. Men go through life not knowing how to sew on a button. I don't think it's harmed any of them. But what we have is the elitist in the Ivy League, in Harvard in particular, and an issue from Harvard Magazine for the May issue, a piece by Aaron O'Donnell is headlined, The Risk of Homeschooling. Homeschooling. Attacking homeschooling. Now, again, I just pointed out to you, according to the stats, 5% of the children around the nation are homeschooled prior to all the shutdown we're having now. And basically, the attitude of Harvard Magazine and Harvard Law School, because they teamed up on it, is basically, as parents, you're not smart enough. You're not smart enough, and you will look like you're an authoritarian dictator to the children, and that you will be taking a prominent place in their life as an instructor and a leader and a director and a boss, and that's what parents do, at least in most, because we take care of our children, we instruct them, we correct them, and we punish as necessary. But the Harvard Law School Child Advocacy Program put out, according to the director of it, made this statement. She says, homeschooling violates children's right to a meaningful education and their right to be protected from potential child abuse. Well, now, no one's arguing for child abuse. But homeschooling violates a children's right to a meaningful education? If the parent is qualified enough to teach their child, I don't have a problem. At some point, the child is going to have to pass a series of tests if they want to go to institutes of higher learning. They're going to have to show that they've actually learned things along the way, not just sat and watched SpongeBob hour after hour. But then the concern also was from the Harvard elitist is, parents would, quote, have authoritarian control over their children. Yeah, you're damn right. I'm going to have the authoritarian control over my child. Not the state, not the school, not some professor who's hell-bent on socialism. I will have control over it. And I'm sure many of you have the idea. But they look at this and they try to present it as all homeschooling basically ends up as abuse of parents, I mean abusive kids, and that the parents doing it are incompetent and stupid. Many of the parents, by the way, according to stats, who do homeschool action actually tend to be more educated. But the magazine cover, according to Nicole Russell, who wrote this piece for the Daily Signal, says the magazine cover to the Harvard Magazine shows a boy imprisoned in a house made of books as his public and private school friends frolic happily outside. And the books, of course, are titled Reading, Writing, and Arithmetic, and also includes the Bible, because you're not going to get the Bible taught in school. And then she points out the fantastic illustrators at Harvard Magazine spelled arithmetic wrong, but then later corrected it. But again, their attitude is that school, homeschooled children are surrounded by religious zealots, creating authoritarian dictatorship over them. And they call these schools of higher learning? Really? Coming up in the next hour, how AOC, Congresswoman AOC, has no clue about the economy. And I don't know if she was homeschooled or not. Probably the public system in New York, which might have a lot to be desired. And Chris Cuomo comes out of the basement. Fake news. Next hour.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.